It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak up here on Signal Hill, where it is currently 65 degrees. They're calling for sunny skies today with a high near 66. Northwest winds to 10, mostly clear tonight with a low of 48. West winds to 10. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 69. And they're also calling for sunny skies on Sunday and mostly sunny skies on Memorial Day. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is kicking a little more money to the Kodiak Island Borough School District. Alaska Soda Jerk is at the Crab Festival, but it wasn't easy getting here. And the Anchorage School District is increasing security at school entrances after the recent student shooting at Uvalde, Texas. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The decision not to storm a classroom where a gunman locked himself in with students and teachers was, quote, wrong. That's now the assessment from the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety on the mass shooting that claimed the lives of 19 children and two teachers inside Robb Elementary School in Uvalde Tuesday. Colonel Stephen McCraw and other Texas officials already facing intense scrutiny for offering conflicting accounts, now facing even more criticism after McCraw revealed today that despite 911 calls from students about an active shooter, more than an hour elapsed before police confronted the shooter. McCraw says the incident commander on site, reportedly among roughly 19 officers on scene, determined at the time that it was no longer an active shooter situation, but that of a barricaded gunman.
Hey, from the benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision, period. There's no excuse for that.
As for the school resource officer that authorities initially said had taken a bullet, McCraw now says the officer was not at the school. A few hundred miles away in Houston, the National Rifle Association is holding its annual convention celebrating the Second Amendment.
No more shame! No more shame!
Protesters on both sides of the gun control debate are also there in large numbers. NPR's Tim Mack reports some people have opted to skip the NRA gathering, but some of the biggest names in the Republican Party are still attending.
Political influence draws politicians, right? And there's no greater example of that than the fact that former President Donald Trump will be addressing in a keynote address today the NRA's annual meeting.
NPR's Tim Mack reporting. The Pentagon says the United States continues to support Ukraine, but not with troops. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports that's despite a Russian blockade threatening world food supplies.
Pentagon spokesman John Kirby called Russia's blockade of Ukrainian ports the weaponization of food, which could be detrimental to famine relief in Africa and Asia. But Kirby stressed the U.S. would not directly engage the Russian Navy.
The president's been clear, we're not going to have U.S. troops fighting in Ukraine. That includes the skies over Ukraine, and that includes the potential for a naval conflict with Russia.
Kirby said international diplomatic efforts are underway to address limited grain supplies and rising food prices. He said the U.S. continues to give Ukraine training and weapons, including for coastal defense. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
A federal judge is allowing the New York Attorney General's office to continue its civil investigation against former President Donald Trump's business practices. Trump's lawsuit was dismissed today. The ruling comes a day after a New York appeals court determined that Trump must comply with the state AG's office and answer questions under oath. The Dow closes up 576 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Island Borough School District is getting a funding bump from the Kodiak Island Borough. Last week, the Borough Assembly approved the school district's request to raise their annual assistance by $1.5 million. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports that without the boost, the district risked cutting teachers and programs.
The Kodiak Island Borough School District will now receive just under $12 million from the borough. That's nearly a quarter of the district's budget. Sandy Dawes is the chief financial officer for KIBSD. She says the budget just wasn't working on paper for the upcoming year without that assistance, or a serious staff cut.
In order to maintain all the programs that we currently have in our district, that's what we need from the borough to make sure we maintain those programs.
The school district is tightening their budget as well. KIBSD is pulling $2 million out of their fund balance, $500,000 more than they plan to. That's kind of like drawing from money that the school is hoping to have by the end of the year. If the fund balance gets overdrawn by the district, they could find themselves scrambling to fill a multi-million dollar hole in a future budget. Larry Ledoux is KIBSD's superintendent. He's also the state of Alaska's former education commissioner. He blames the state government for letting things get so bad.
You're always budgeting when you don't know your revenue. I mean, how do I develop a budget that will meet the needs of our kids when I don't know local funding, state funding, federal funding, until I'm halfway through the fiscal year? No person would do their own personal budget that way.
One issue is that the borough government is on the hook for school bond debt, namely debt left over from the construction of Kodiak High School. The state agreed to partially pay for the debt, but has since failed to fund the bond debt reimbursement program during the budgeting process in recent years. That's a multi-million dollar hole the borough has to fill, which leaves less money to invest into the school system or into maintenance for school buildings, all of which are technically owned by the borough government. Ledoux says it didn't used to be like this.
When the state started running out of oil revenue, they started cutting back. Last year, they only gave 30% or 33% of the bond reimbursement when we were expecting 70%. The previous year, they gave nothing. And it used to be that if we needed a roof replaced, the state would come through with the money every year. And they stopped doing that.
The state does provide consistent funding based on the amount of students enrolled in the district every year, but that decreases as enrollment declines. That's been a consistent issue for KIBSD. And the needs of the district grow every year. Staff costs go up by around $1 million annually as staff gain experience in the district, and insurance costs and recent rising inflation push the district to the extreme. The school district is still looking to trim the budget for the upcoming school year, and there's always next year's budget. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Alaska's Soda Jerk is a 50s-styled soda bar that serves soft drinks and milkshakes. It was on the road to Homer last week to catch a ferry to Kodiak's Crab Fest when a fire nearly ended its journey. Kelsey Ingram is one of the business's owners. He was driving behind the trailer when the fire broke out.
It was obvious once he got stopped that there was smoke inside the trailer because it was coming out of the seams of the side of the trailer. So we opened one of the doors, smoke billowing out, ran around to the back door, dropped the back gate, and it was obviously there was a fire inside the trailer.
The trailer was consumed by the blaze, with crew members barely managing to save their luggage from the back. It's not yet clear what caused it. Incredibly, the loss of their trailer hasn't stopped them from attending Crab Fest. The crew hastily put together a second trailer, loaned to them by a friend, and still managed to make the ferry. And according to Ingram, they knew right away that they didn't want to give up any of their scheduled events for the summer season, especially not Crab Fest.
We do a couple of small events before Crab Fest, but to us, it kicks off our season. It's so important for a number of reasons. You know, our bills run all year, and by this time of year, things are getting pretty tight.
Alaska Soda Jerk also has a permanent location in Anchorage. A GoFundMe page was started to help cover the costs from the trailer fire. Warm and dry weather heading into Memorial Day has prompted warnings for Alaskans to be extra careful not to start wildfires. A burn ban is in effect in Anchorage, prohibiting campfires, outdoor fire pits, and open burning, although barbecue grills, including those using charcoal, are still allowed. Violating a city burn ban is now a misdemeanor crime under an emergency ordinance by the Anchorage Assembly that they passed last Tuesday. The State Division of Forestry has suspended burn permits for most of South Central Alaska, including the Matanuska and Susitna Valleys and the Kenai Peninsula, as well as Fairbanks, Delta Junction, and the Copper River Basin. And the National Weather Service has issued red flag warnings for a swath covering all of the central interior and most of South Central and Southwest Alaska, from the Matsu, Anchorage, and the Kenai, all the way to Dillingham and King Salmon. Those areas are expected to see sunny skies and high temperatures in the 60s or 70s throughout the holiday weekend. Representatives of the Anchorage School District say increasing security at school entrances is a high priority after a high school student in Uvalde, Texas, killed 19 students and two teachers at an elementary school on Tuesday. The Anchorage School District began adding secure vestibules to its elementary schools 4 years ago. They add additional levels of security at school entrances by requiring visitors to enter through two locked doors. Front office staff can see people outside the front door at all times, either through windows or through security cameras. The district built secure vestibules at 17 of their 61 elementary schools so far.
We won't stop until we've done all of our elementary schools.
Rob Holland is the Senior Director of Maintenance and Operations for the district. He says he's hopeful the budget the legislature passed earlier this month could free up some funds for district security projects.
As soon as we know that, then we will move swiftly to complete as many of these as we can with that money, if approved, in Juneau. And that way we won't have to wait till next April, and we'll be able to put even more of these on the next bond.
A $111 million bond on the Anchorage municipal ballot would have paid for new secure vestibules at 12 schools. That bond failed, but the school board could put up another bond on the ballot next year. In the meantime, the district has other security measures in place. Ashley Lawley is the district's Director of Security and Emergency Preparedness. She says the district works closely with school resource officers and the Anchorage Police Department. The district notifies the Anchorage Police Department about social media threats, and the department calls nearby schools if someone in the area is considered armed and dangerous.
So far, for every social media threat we've ever had, students have gone to school, continued to stay in school. And I think a lot of that is because of our strong partnership with our school resource officers. They act very fast and efficiently, and that helps us to be able to make really good decisions.
Lawley says the district's health services department is also working to expand mental health resources at every school. A small group of Petersburg High School students spent Monday night calculating the latest position of the terminus of the southernmost tidewater glacier in the Northern Hemisphere. They're part of a decades-long tradition to survey the LeConte Glacier. Joe Bicknicki reports.
Kinley, 0.9. South side, 65, 26.
High school math teacher Tom Thompson assigns data points to the sophomores, juniors, and seniors gathered to eat pizza and crunch the numbers. Just days before, they spent their day recording those points using survey equipment, helicoptered up to spots high up on either side of the steep-walled fjord. Senior Latham Johnson uses a software design program called Rhino to map out the survey points.
And then it kind of shows how far, if the glacier is receding or if it's increased since the last time. And I guess it's been really stable over the last few years, which is awesome. It's a lot better than what was happening before, but yeah. Rhino is definitely something new that we've started doing, because at first we had the Forest Service do it. So just because the Forest Service is super busy right now, I took a class a couple years ago that's allowed me to kind of figure this out and doodle on my own, so kind of just working and figuring it out as I go, just seeing, watching YouTube videos and stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Johnson had a scheduling conflict and was disappointed not to be able to travel to the glacier this year, but he recommends the experience.
The glacier trip, taking a helicopter up, and being able to look at LeConte Glacier is definitely one of the highlights of high school. So I totally recommend it for any kids who want to try it out as they're coming up through middle school and elementary school. Is something to look forward to and definitely apply for, because it's amazing.
The students give up their lunch times Wednesdays throughout the year to learn how to use the surveying equipment and the trigonometry they'll need. Junior Didi Toyamura looks down at a complex drawing of the angles that she's recorded.
So we take angles from the south side to a specific point on the glacier. And then we fly over to the north side and try to find the same point on that side and then take the angle measure of that point. And then, since we know the distance between the north side and the south side, we use the law of sines to find the lengths to the point. And then if it's like...
Toyamura is interrupted with a reminder from the teacher on graphing technique.
After we find the side lengths, we use the law of sines again to find the longitude and the departure of those... of that point, and then we use those vectors to graph it on the graph. And if it lines up about, then that's where we plot that point.
Part of the challenge is making sure one group on the north side of the fjord and another on the south side are taking a sight on the same spot on the ice face thousands of feet away. Sometimes that point they've just recorded breaks off from the glacier and disappears. That only happened with one this year, and the students seem pretty happy with the data they collected. They're even getting some help from a couple of alumni of the program, Lydia Martin and Julian Kumps, back from college.
I'm Julian Kumps. I was invited back just to help out with doing the math again, and I've been working on my computer trying to kind of automate the process, just kind of testing out some different functions and seeing if there's an easy way to check our work.
On the desk nearby, there are printouts from previous year's mapping and photos of the teams of prior students who've been in the program. It was started in 1983 by Petersburg High teacher Paul Bowen, and it's happened almost every year since then, carried on by other instructors like Victor Troutman and now Thompson.
It's such a big glacier when you're looking at it from our perspective. It's really hard to see the recession and precession until you really plot the data, because it looks kind of the same, and then you might realize that it's moved 500 feet or 1,000 feet either way. But what we plotted on Friday could be totally different here on Monday, because even as we were there, it calves so much. And if anybody's been out there recently, LeConte is full of ice. I mean, there's a lot of ice moving off that thing. So it's a living body.
Prior students have documented some big retreats of the ice sheet, but it now hits tidewater in a relatively narrower and shallower part of the fjord. Its position has been somewhat stable in recent years. For another senior, Leah Kittums, this year was her second surveying the glacier. She says she was able to lead her group.
I guess going up a second time, I just had more knowledge of like what we were supposed to do, like setting up, and then I guess trying to find the angles in the first place, because you have to match up the two different spots from what would be on the north side and what would be on the south side. So it's a lot of like reimagining where the points are actually at on the glacier.
Another senior, Rose Quitzlin, helped with calculations last year but didn't make the trip to survey the ice until this year. She says it's a much different perspective than her past experiences.
It's spectacular. I've gone out to the glacier so many times since I was a little kid, just going out on the boat with my dad. And it's such a different experience getting helicoptered out there, because the elevation that we're at, it's about 1,200 feet, I think. And so you can just really see the whole entire glacier and the bay. And it's like a bird's eye view of it.
The survey captures the ice sheet's position at just one point in time. It's dynamic and can change dramatically from day to day. But they try to do the survey around the same time every year to make a good comparison. This year's data shows the terminus advanced compared to last year, and it's also further out in the fjord from positions mapped in 2019 and 2018. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Wicknicki.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. One of those creative minds is Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, Ph.D. He's co-authored a parenting guide for those who thought they no longer needed one. When will my grown-up kid grow up?
When kids reach emerging adulthood, it's often a really nice time for parents
because adolescence is often a struggle. And then when the kids reach emerging adulthood, what I've found and what a lot of other researchers have found is that the relationship almost always gets better. So they learn to see each other as friends rather than parent and child. But that doesn't mean it's always an easy transition. Parents realize that they need to step back. They need to give them room for making their own decisions. But they also want to stay connected. They want to have a friendly relationship with them. And so they have to learn to balance the two and to respond to what their kids want. Sometimes the kids want to be really connected, and sometimes they don't. And so parents have to adapt. And it's not necessarily an easy thing to do. In fact, in one of the questions we asked in our survey about what's the most difficult part of your kids reaching this stage of life, the parents talked about missing their kids more than anything else. They, on one hand, are happy to be able to turn their attention back to their own lives, but they love their kids and they miss being close to them on a daily basis.
Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, PhD, co-author of When Will My Grown-Up Kid Grow Up? There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
To better serve our community by understanding its needs, the 2022 Kodiak Health and Well-Being Survey is now open to Kodiak residents age 18 and older. The survey results help healthcare and social service providers focus on what is most important to those of us who live and work on the island. It also helps attract grant funding to help improve health and social services. The survey is anonymous, takes about 10 minutes, and can be completed on a smartphone or tablet. At the end, participants can opt to enter a drawing for a cash prize of up to $500 by emailing their contact information. Look for a survey invite in this week's mail or access the survey on the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center website.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the 27th day of May, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 5:24. It won't set again until 10:50. That will give us 17 hours and 25 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 13 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 32 degrees set in 2017, and our record high was 74. That was set in 2006. Currently 65 degrees here at the station, according to the thermometer tossed into the salmonberry bushes behind the station. Only 57 degrees out at the airport. Maybe someone should go tap that thermometer. They are also showing wind speeds from the east at 6 miles per hour, 58% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 66 and northwest winds to 10. Mostly clear tonight at the low around 48, west winds to 10. Sunny skies tomorrow too with a high near 69. Northwest winds continuing 10 to 15. And for Saturday night, mostly clear skies. Sunday, sunny conditions, mostly sunny on Memorial Day. And just a little cloudy Monday night. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 1:23 this afternoon. That will be a 6.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 6:46 p.m. of 1.7 feet. Your next high tide will be at 1:04 a.m., an 8.8-foot tide, and our low tide on the east side tomorrow morning will be at 7:50 a.m. and be minus 6/10. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 1:51 this afternoon. That will be 11.4 feet in Larsen Bay. Your next low tide will be at 7:32 this evening of 2.5 feet, followed by a high tide at 1:36 a.m. of 14.4 feet, and your morning low tide for the west side will happen at 8:19 a.m. and be minus 1.1 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanek, Kodiak's east side offshore. West winds to 20 knots today, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, west 15, seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 today, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 2 feet. Well, it's happening right now, the Kodiak Public Library Association's annual Crabfest book sale. That's going on at the Kodiak Public Library until 4 p.m. today, and it will start again tomorrow at 10 a.m. and go till 3 p.m. It's fill a grocery bag with your chosen books, only $5. So head down there right now. There's some hustle and bustle going on. Also continuing to happen is the Kodiak Community Blood Drive. That's happening at the Alaska Armory National Guard Armory, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. through Monday. Schedule your appointment with Tara Cup at 907-654-9419. Senator Lisa Murkowski will give a report on the recent American Fisheries Advisory Council bill that was passed recently. That's happening Saturday at 4:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Harbor Convention Center. A question and answer period will follow her presentation, and all are welcome to attend. The Kodiak Island Borough will be removing and relocating the roll-off dumpsters that are located on Salif Lane at the west end of Beaver Lake. They will be relocated to the Dark Lake ball field area behind Safeway. This action is being taken due to public safety concerns, area resident complaints, and repeated interaction with wildlife. The move is planned for next week after the Memorial Day holiday. Happenings at the Kodiak Public Library other than their book sale. Wednesdays, the library hosts a Lego club. It's a drop-in program for youth after school. Kids under 10 should be accompanied by an adult. And the Teen Book Club meets Thursdays, 4 p.m. in the library's teen room. Also on Thursdays at 11 a.m. is preschool story time. That's for children 3 to 5 and their families. Storytime is limited to 10 children, so please call the library at 486-8686 to reserve a spot for next Thursday. Read Beyond the Beaten Path. Sign up for Kodiak Public Library's summer reading program. All ages are welcome to participate and earn prizes. Use MeanStack to log your reading and get involved. Check it out at kodiak.meanstack.org. For more information, call the library or drop by soon. And also, the Kodiak Public Library is hosting a community beekeeping project this summer. Check out their many books on everything bee-related or attend a live hive check every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper, or you can watch from inside. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the March 5th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Kodiak is so good at lulling us into a sense of security when it comes to weather, isn't it? But the snow in March is pretty normal around here, and the sunny skies that often follow the snow are just that much more enjoyable because of it. We've had some beautiful sunrises of late, and over the next week, if you are up watching the sunrise, go out about 45 minutes before that, look toward the east-southeast, very low on the horizon, and you will see first Saturn and then Jupiter rise. Saturn rises a little after 7 and Jupiter at about 7:20. If you look very closely with binoculars a bit east of Jupiter, you might see Mercury too. A beautiful morning lineup of the planets. Birding is pretty fun around here during this time of year. Spring migrants will start showing up soon, and there are some overwintering birds still to enjoy. Watch along the waterfront for the return of the kittiwakes as the month progresses. In the meantime, we have some mighty handsome ducks, geese, and swans that hang around here in the wintertime. Tucked away in Women's Bay or Gibson Cove, you might find Steller's eiders. And then there are the emperor geese, one of my favorite birds that overwinter here.
Large groups of them are often seen in Women's Bay and Middle Bay along the mouths of creeks and along gravel shorelines. You might spot smaller gatherings of them in Gibson Cove. They really are a beautiful bird with striking coloring, a white head and neck, black throat, and a gray body with black accents scalloping the feathers. Add orange feet and a pink bill, and you have the emperor goose. Very, very striking. Take your binoculars along on your next drive or hike. You never know what you might see. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.